This is Radio Maria, and welcome to Pro Parent with Ciro Candia.
Hello, and welcome to Pro Parent, the program that promotes confident parenting with me, Ciro Candia. My mission? To provide parents with the tools and encouragement to become the best mothers and fathers God is calling them to be, fostering homes where children grow in character and virtue. Imagine a new toy hits the store shelves. It's bright, shiny, and promises endless fun. But after a while, a disturbing pattern begins to emerge. A small but significant percentage of children who play with this toy become withdrawn, irritable, and even depressed. Now, we'd never tolerate that, would we? You know, we'd demand recalls and investigations, all sorts of articles coming out in the press. But what if the most damaging influence on our children isn't a toy at all, but something more subtle, more pervasive, something our children eagerly reach for every day? Last week, we touched on the work of Jonathan Haidt and his alarming findings about the impact of smartphones on children. This is a slow burn, chipping away at children's well-being. And as mental health concerns among young people escalate, we can't afford to ignore this problem. We should take child safety seriously at all levels, which is why we're shining a spotlight on this issue throughout a series of shows. So what can we do? As we discussed last week, children need room to develop the skills that make for happy, resilient adults. Parents, you have the power to make a difference. It's time to rethink that digital landscape, says Jonathan Haidt, and pave the way for a childhood where real and genuine interactions take place and healthy outdoor play and pursuits reign supreme. That's why getting children off their smartphones is the first crucial step. You know, we need to dismantle this phone-based childhood before we can truly rebuild a healthy one. Haidt, in his book The Anxious Generation, lays out a really crucial challenge. He calls it the collective action problem. Imagine you, as a parent, decide to do the right thing, no phone until age 15 or 16 for your son or daughter. But then your child starts to argue, everyone else has one. I'll be left out, not knowing what's happening. And it becomes difficult for you and your family because you're seemingly alone. But what if half the families in your child's class took the same step as you did? Suddenly, your son or daughter's argument becomes, well, some children have phones and some don't, and I'd like to be with the group that does. It's going to be a much weaker position for them. This is where establishing norms and minimum standards becomes powerful. No smartphones before middle to end of secondary school could become the new normal. You know, we hear a lot in the press about the dangers of puberty blockers, and rightly so. But let's face it, these smartphones are distractions. They are experience blockers, especially during a crucial time like puberty. Of course, communication with your child is important, but that's what brick phones are for. You know, they were designed for calls and texts, and millennials navigated puberty quite successfully with them, and they turned out all right. Can we say the same for Generation Z, constantly on Instagram? Well, as the mental health crisis demonstrates, you know, for many young people today, this isn't necessarily the case. So my first piece of advice is join forces with other families. Join WhatsApp groups. You know, this is a good use of social media to encourage other families, friends, to hold back on giving young children smartphones. Do everything you can and don't be shy about speaking out. Sometimes it just takes a few brave people in the playground or amongst a group of friends to change a culture dramatically. Here's my second suggestion. No social media before 16. 16 isn't some magical safety age. Some damage will still happen. But it's far better than 13. Right now, many platforms consider 13 the threshold for internet adulthood. That's based on outdated regulations about contracts with tech companies. It's not what's actually good for children's mental health which has been guiding this policy. And worse yet, no one even enforces this age limit. For example, Instagram's terms say that you must be 13, but there's no age verification process. It's so easy for younger children to sign up, opening themselves up to all sorts of content, strangers, marketing, and all sorts of data collection. So let's all do our best to push for 16 at least as the new minimum. And we can start this in our own homes, creating a culture from a young age, during the primary school age, where we set clear limits, ideally, as I said, with support of other parents and groups. And then we do what we can, lobbying our MPs, writing to newspapers, those of us perhaps who have skills in this area, and generally spreading the word. My third suggestion is pushing for phone-free schools. Allowing phones in schools makes zero sense to me. Jonathan Haidt wrote an insightful article called Get Phones Out of Schools Now, you know, where he examines all the research on this issue. And here's the problem. Even a few children texting means everyone's checking their phones or risking being out of the loop. That's perhaps why toilet trips are so frequent in schools where phones aren't properly banned. Some schools try to compromise. No phones during class, or children have to keep their phones in their pockets. But as Haidt argues, that's like a heroin recovery clinic saying, you can bring your heroin, just don't shoot up in the bathroom. The mere presence of smartphones creates all sorts of harms for students. Once that distraction device is within reach, their full attention to the teacher becomes almost impossible. And it's not just about focus in class. You know, even in the lunch hall where you think children are finally socialising, phones always get in the way. They can't fully engage with their friends sitting right there because the phone is calling them. It beckons. Everyone is multitasking and nobody is truly present in the moment. And is there evidence that our addiction to smartphones and multitasking is somehow eroding our ability to think deeply and understand complex ideas? Well, Nicholas Carr, in his book The Shallows, raises this very concern. Now, he argues that our addiction to digital distraction is rewiring our brains, making sustained focus and critical thinking increasingly difficult. He argues that our endless digital distractions, especially those from smartphones, what they do is disrupt a vital process, this ability to transform raw information into true knowledge and understanding. He highlights the interplay between two forms of memory, working memory and long-term memory. As you all know, working memory is our immediate consciousness, if you like. It's what we're actively thinking about right now, you listening to me. But this working memory has a very limited capacity. Apparently, it holds no more than 4 items at a time, and that varies based on the type of information. Whereas long-term memory is our vast storage of knowledge and experience. And deep thinking, Nicholas Carr argues, is about successfully transferring information from our working memory to our long-term memory. And this transfer is a process known as memory consolidation. Also, deep thinking, Carr explains, goes beyond just mere information storage. Happens when we connect new information to the vast web of knowledge and experience already stored in our long-term memory. And this process creates this rich, meaningful understanding. Perhaps if we're fortunate, it might even lead to wisdom. But the problem with addictive smartphone use, he argues, is its ability to disrupt memory consolidation, that crucial process of transferring new information from working memory into our long-term memory. Our brain becomes overloaded, unable to hold on to anything long enough for it to be transferred and to become true knowledge. Imagine our working memory is a tiny room. Every tweet, notification, or Google result forces us to clear out what's already there to make room for the new. And Carr also emphasizes that memory consolidation, for that to happen, it requires focused attention. It's through this sustained concentration on new information that it's cemented into our long-term memory so that it can connect with our existing knowledge. Now, however, this vibrant digital environment which has been created around us is a relentless source of distraction. Imagine that this constant interruption prevents our young people, prevents us from focusing long enough to truly absorb information and therefore build those meaningful connections which lead to deep thinking. Now, there's a very interesting study from a few years ago that came out of Stanford University in California. And researchers, they split people into two groups. Those who spend a lot of time online multitasking, rapidly switching between messages and content, and they labelled these as heavy multitaskers, and a group who did much less of this kind of activity, and so they called this group the light multitaskers. So they took these two groups and gave them six standard tests of cognitive function, how deeply and effectively they could think. And the heavy multitaskers performed worse on every single test. Surprisingly, one of the six tests focused on multitasking itself. And again, the heavy multitaskers did worse. Even though they might claim to be multitasking experts, what's really happening is that they're wasting mental energy switching between tasks. To me, the most revealing of these tests was one that examined how well people are able to distinguish between important information and trivia. And here, the heavy multitaskers again perform much worse than the light multitaskers. And what the researchers theorized, and I think this makes complete sense, is that the more time we spend jumping from bits of information to bits of information every couple of minutes during our day, the less we worry about how important something is, and the more we're simply attracted to whatever's new. So it's the new thing that grabs our attention. And so, concludes Carr, that's what we've created for ourselves, a world in which we're constantly subverting our ability to think our deepest, our most profound thoughts. The truth is that smartphones tap into a very primal part of our brains, you know, that craving for information. You know, we humans crave information. Deep down, it's in our neurons. We have a very deep instinct to seek out and gather as much information as quickly as possible. Perhaps it stems from some evolutionary need to understand our environment for survival. And so it's not surprising that studies show that every time we learn something new or even go looking for information, our brains give us a little reward, a dose of dopamine, that feel-good chemical. It's important stuff for our brains, dopamine, but it's also what fuels addiction. You know, dopamine makes things feel good, and so we want to do them again and again. However, modern technology, and particularly these smartphones, have drastically changed the equation when it comes to information access. Back in the 1980s, when I was at secondary school, finding information required effort. To go to libraries, we had to read books and go through encyclopedias and attend lectures. But the difference between then and now is staggering. Today, the way we interact with information, and sadly including harmful information, is fundamentally different. Consider how teenagers seeking pornography faced significant barriers in the past. You know, they needed to find privacy, there were limited sources, etc. Today, smartphones relentlessly bombard our young people with content, making information gathering passive. So before you had to search for information, now with things like pornography, it finds you. It finds you. You know, we've created an environment of unlimited information. where information is pushed on us all the time through our phones and other devices, from Google or from Facebook or from Twitter, Instagram, TikTok or whatever. Although I was glad to hear a few months ago perhaps that a US bill is going to require TikTok to be banned from the US. Whether it happens or not, and although the motivations for doing this appear more political than the moral, at least it's a step in the right direction. Now, anyway, the amount of information out there is endless. And as I say, this constant availability leads to these addictive behaviours. But before I leave you, a sobering thought. This is not all just about teenagers. A recent Pew survey showed that 46% of teenagers say their parents are sometimes distracted by their phone when they're trying to talk to them. We probably recognise some of these addictive behaviours in ourselves, you know, compulsively checking our phones even when there's no real reason. We instinctively respond to any hint of a notification. You know, for many adults, the phone is the last thing they see at night and the first thing they touch in the morning. Apparently, an adult will pull out his or her smartphone and look at it about 160 times over the course of a day, which works out to about once every 6 minutes during your waking life. Now, of course, this constant engagement is great for internet companies, for Google and Twitter and all the others. You know, they thrive on us obsessively checking our phones and scrolling online. They want us flitting between bits of information as fast as possible. Why? Because the more we jump around, the more data they're going to collect about us, and the more opportunities they have to show us the ads that fund their businesses. But it's not just about boundaries. Next week, I'm going to shift the focus onto the positive and how we can create a home environment that encourages healthy digital habits and gives our children the tools to thrive in the world that we live in. That's all from me, Ciro Candia, on today's episode of ProParent, the program that promotes confident parenting. Tune in, same time, next week. Goodbye.